Let me tell you about that. I had some ideas for a while about what I go out for these runs, and I get these ideas about what I want to speak on, and then I come back and I usually ask Martha if they're any good, because she's right outside my door, and if she makes a face, then I usually just move on to another one. But this is one she thought sounded interesting, so if it's not, you can blame her. All right. But here's what I was thinking about. What are you looking at? There's a lot of stuff to look at out there in the world. And the eyes are such extraordinary. As a matter of fact, we were talking this morning about the eye, marvelous eye, how it's contained. And my dad had a single eye. He had detached retina. And he could see more with one eye than we saw with two. I don't know how he drove and spotted deer and stayed on the road at the same time. But he could do it. And all the things, the rods and the cones and the receptors and the complexity of it. And of course, one of the arguments for the intelligent design, and we would say, is just how complex, how in the world could something as complex as the eye come about? The eye allows us to see some extraordinary things. I mean, there's so much beauty. By the way, these are all Barry Davis pictures, so yeah. I'd give myself credit since it's on my screen, but just some beautiful, beautiful things to view. This is from our side garden. This is one of my personal favorites. This is on. I actually almost didn't get to work this day. I took a picture of a hoarfrost and a willow tree back on a back road, back off Farmersville, and I just kept stopping and snapping pictures. It's almost like fireworks, and just beautiful. This is my niece, Madeline May. I went looking for this. I'm very proud of this picture. She's kind of grown up since this, but looking at a child's face is just beautiful. Her eyes are just so, her eyes and our eyes are so capable of seeing things. Another Davis garden. I think this is, what is this? Let me know what this is. Day-lily. Pardon? Day-lily. Day-lily? It's some kind of a lily. And I visited Longwood Garden a while back. You got to go to the lily pads, right? And see the lily pads. And this one turned out exceptionally well. It was a well-behaved target. Years ago, my wife and I spent 2 weeks in Canada. This is part of Cabot Trail. You pay to get in and drive around all day. And the pictures are just absolutely spectacular. I came home with about 700 pictures. If you want to see them sometime, come on over. I love digital photography. And this is from our butterfly bush last year in the back. I am told, I think this is a swallowtail, correct? All right. I've checked with Martha on entomology. So your eyes can see extraordinary things. Unfortunately, they can look at other things too. This one comes to mind immediately from my friends at Reverend Hunt. And on the eighth day, man created sin. Yeah. 7 days God rested, eighth day man joined, and what did he do? Went out and checked it out. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take you through a series of verses. We're going to start Genesis 3:6. When the woman saw the tree was good for food, it was pleasant to the eye, and a tree be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof and did eat, and gave also to her husband, and he did eat. And as a result, we were weeding yesterday. And worse, that was a start. Something, and it all started with the eye. We've read, by the way, the word there for pleasant means the desire, longing, something in their heart. I really wanted to see. I've heard, quote, the eyes are the windows of the soul. I tried to find out who said that. No one seems to know. I thought Shakespeare. No, I went through my Bartlett's collection. The closest it could come is actually from Matthew 6:22, where it talks about the light of the body is the eye. That could be part of it. A very famous poet, William Blake, spoke about this in a poem called The Everlasting Gospel, where he said, "This life's dim windows of the soul distorts the heavens from pole to pole and leads you to believe a lie when you see with, not through, the eye." So that has window and soul and eye. So that might be it too. But, you know, you can look into somebody's eyes and you can kind of tell if they're telling the truth or not. As a matter of fact, we watch Pawn Stars a lot sometimes. And the one guy said, "I know how to tell when people aren't telling the truth. I look them in the eye." I'm going to introduce you to a couple of these stories in here. and examples in Scripture. Genesis 6:2. I was like doing them in order so we can leaf through it. Genesis 6:2 says this: "The sons of God saw the daughters of men; they were very fair, and took them wives from all they chose." Now, the sons of God have often been described as angels. This is actually when the Nephilim were born, but they can't be angels. Why can't they be angels? The angels aren't male or female. As a matter of fact, this is a time when the earth was being populated. The sons of God were the descendants of Seth. They actually lived up on the mountain. Cain, remember, was banished. Cain lived down in the valley. He had his. And the sons of God were the ones that were following God's teaching. Can you imagine the kind of theology that Adam and Eve had at that time? And they sat under that. And, of course, Seth was born after Cain. And really what it's talking about is the fact that the sons of God, the sons of Seth, his descendants, looked at these Canaanite girls down and said, "Boy, they look pretty good." And they were not moving in the right direction, and they saw them, they were fair, and they got hitched. And is often the problem that would happen. If you follow that out in verse 5, you say there was so much wickedness that God says, "I think I'm just going to pull the plug." Then some guy showed up with a boat. You might have heard of him. So that's one. Genesis 13:10. Later on, Abraham and Lot. They're both growing. They're such a large group of men and animals, and they're kind of getting each other's way. And Abraham says, "You know what? We're relatives. We shouldn't fight like this. So why don't you pick where you want to go, and I'll take what's left." And what had happened? "And Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan. It was well watered everywhere. This is before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even the garden of the Lord, the land of Egypt." And that's where he picked. He says, "I'll take this one." He took the good one. Sadly, it was right next door to Sodom. And actually in the Scriptures you read that actually that's what happened. He as far as Sodom. So, and what did he do it based on? What his eyes saw. He said, "That looks good." Anybody know what that is? You can go see this in the Holy Land. That's considered Lot's wife. I don't know that it is, by the way. But Lot's wife, in Genesis 19:6, Lot's wife looked back and turned into a pillar of salt. She was told by the angelic beings, don't look behind you, stay in all your plain, escape to the mountain lest you be consumed. Don't look back. As a matter of fact, we read elsewhere in Scriptures, Jesus said in Luke 9:62, anybody who puts his hand to the plow and looks back isn't fit for the kingdom. Got to be focused forward. We don't even know Lot's wife's name, Mrs. Lot. She turned up here, she turned up one more time. Jesus said, "Remember Lot's wife." How would you like to be remembered as somebody to not be? Jesus said, "Remember Lot's wife." All based on the eyes. All based on the eyes. In Genesis 39:7, Potiphar's wife, she cast her eyes on Joseph. Joseph moved up inside Potiphar's household to where Potiphar didn't even know where his bread came from. He just sat down and he had food. He gave control over everything. And then Potiphar's wife to look at Joseph and said, "Hey, he's a pretty cute kid." She chased him. As a matter of fact, she literally tried to snag him. He got away. She held the cloak. You know the story. He ended up being in prison for that unjustly. Now, we know that God's hand was in all that later on. But once again, that was based on Potiphar's wife. She cast her eyes on Joseph. Joshua 7:21, Achan. Here's another guy. We call these guys the bad boys of the Bible, maybe. Joshua's—they'd just been beaten by Ai. They just got the saltines knocked out of them. They're saying, "What is going on here?" And God said, "There's sin in the camp. Somebody did something they weren't supposed to." And they did the research and they found out that Achan had held on to some Babylonian garments and valuables that they weren't supposed to touch. What Achan said was, he said in Joshua 7:21, He said, I saw the spoils, a goodly Babylon garment, and 200 shekels of silver, and a wedge of gold, and 50 shekels of weight. I coveted them and took them, and behold, they are hid in the earth in the midst of my tent, and the silver under it. So how did he covet it? He saw it. He said, I saw it, and I just had to have it. I was watching Mecum's auctions yesterday, and they had a 63 Corvette convertible. I came this close to coveting it. Then I saw what it was going to sell for. Once again, your eyes. The eyes. By the way, that valley became known as the Valley of Achor because of the Valley of Trouble. Judges is all about what? People doing what's right in their own eyes. There was no king in Israel. So, you know, I had a psychopathology professor who used to say, the lid is off the id. That means you can go do anything you want. Nobody cares. One of the commentators said this, for want of a settled government, there was no one to call anybody to account. No punishment followed any crime. If it feels good, do it. There's no reason. Why? If it was right in your eyes, it was right. Here's one of my favorite ones, 1 Samuel 16:7. Saul had messed up. Saul was going to lose the throne. Samuel is selected by God to find his replacement. Now Samuel's a little nervous about this. As a matter of fact, we see earlier in 1 Samuel 16:2, Samuel said to God, how can I go if Saul hears this? He'll kill me. I mean, Saul had anger issues, remember? Chucking javelins and things like that. And God said, just go to give a sacrifice, explain why you're there. And this is what happens. This is really cool. It said, it came to pass in verse 16, in 1 Samuel 66, when the sons of Jesse were come, that he looked on Eliab and said, surely the Lord's anointed is before me. This guy looks good. We'll elect him. He was handsome, he was tall, he was right. Remember, that's how Saul got his job, right? Head and shoulders among the rest. And Eliab, actually, the word Eliab means God is my father. And God said, no, it's not him. It's not him. They said, and then he moved on to Abinadab, which means the father is noble. And he passed before, and God said, no, that's not him either. Then they went to Shammah. Shammah means Yahweh, Jehovah hears, all the way down through to David. You know, because he said, you got any more sons? I'm all out. Well, I do have one out in the field. Let's go get him. And that's where he said, you know what? Man looks on the outward appearance, but God looks on the heart. So that's how he became king. In 2 Samuel, David is now king. He's a very good king, a man after God's own heart. Then he went up to the roof, and he looked across the alley there, and he saw some good-looking woman taking a bath. Now, I don't know why she was taking a bath on the roof. I don't know, but he liked what he saw. He liked what he saw. He saw a woman washing herself. She was very beautiful to look upon. The result? Adultery, deceit, and murder. Then one of my favorite stories, the prophet Nathan. Nathan means a gift, by the way. I don't think Nathan was a gift to David at this time. Because Nathan said, let me tell you a story, King. This is in 1 Samuel 12, 1. The Lord sent Nathan unto David, and he said, he's like, yeah, there were two men in the city. There was a rich one, there was a poor one. The poor one had nothing. He had one little ewe lamb, just a little lamb. And his children, and it ate of his own meat, and he drank of his own cup, and had a daughter, and it was like a daughter. This child was almost a pet, this lamb. And there came a traveler unto a rich man, and he didn't want to take any of his own flock, so he took this guy's lamb to dress for the wayfaring coming. He took the poor man's lamb, dressed for the man was coming. David's anger was greatly kindled. David said, "I can't believe that." David had just committed a murder, and he didn't connect the dots. It's incredible how deceit deceives you. And he said, as the Lord lives, this man shall surely die. And restore the lamb fourfold because he did this, because he had no pity. And Nathan said, what? That's you, King David. You are the man. That's a picture of him confronting the king. Confronting kings is a very dangerous thing, by the way. Just a couple more for you. Proverbs 27:20 says, the eyes of man, actually what it says is, it says that hell and destruction are never full. Yeah, there's always more, and we see that in the paper. I looked on the web the other day, just the updates for Lancaster. There were two shootings. There was some guy who failed to negotiate a corner on a motorcycle, and something. I mean, it's never full. Destruction continually. Hell and destruction are never full, so the eyes of man are never satisfied. Gill says this: as the eyes of his body are corporally are still desirous. They're never glutted. Ecclesiastes 1:8 says, the eyes, all things are full of labor, man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. Give me more. One of the most terrifying and frightening things about the stigma of pornography is the fact that our mind's eye is so powerful. You can imagine things once you've seen it once. And in the old days, you had to go to these back rooms with these little booths and things. Now, anybody can get the most loathsome pictures in their living room just by clicking a button. And once you've seen it, it's kind of burned into the retina of your mind. This all happens through the eyes. Ecclesiastes is also Kahalas. He's the preacher. Remember what he said? All is vanity and vexation of spirits. Well, this guy, in Ecclesiastes 2:10 said, whatever my eyes saw, I got it. I would like that. See that 63 split, I want a split window, not a convertible. Although, if you get me a convertible, I'll keep it. But I would rather have the split window 63. It was at $150,000, by the way, when they pulled it off the lot. It was still being bid on, so I don't know what happened. I checked my wallet. Yeah, I don't want to see it anymore. I will talk about that in a minute. But anything his eye wanted, he didn't withhold. I got it. And what was all done, he said, it's still vanity. It's still empty. It's still vexation of spirit. It's nothing. It really is. It was nothing he could not have. Ezekiel 28, talking about the children of Israel, says, but they rebelled against me. This is God talking to them. Not would hearken unto me. They did not, every man, cast away the abominations of their eyes. What they literally did was they carried the gods of Egypt with them, and many of them, they didn't cast it away. They kept it with them, you know, in the face of that. I always had flashbacks of that old Keith Green song, so you want to go back to Egypt. Remember that after a while, they were gone for a while. They said, you know, Egypt wasn't so bad. You know, we had three hots and a cot. You know, there were worse things out there. You know, maybe you ought to be there. Maybe you ought to be there. But he said they didn't cast away the abomination of their eyes. Matthew 6:23 talks about this too. Matthew 6:23 says, if your eye is evil, your whole body shall be full of darkness. By the way, in King James, the word is single. It's talking about being evil. Your whole body is full of darkness. And if therefore the light that is in you be darkness, how great is that darkness? If your light is darkness, how great is that? And we talked about this morning a little, listening to the video and talking about the fact that natural man looks at this stuff, we just don't see it. We see it, they see it. They say, wasn't that neat what evolution caused? I listened to a favorite author of mine once, Barbara Scher, was once talking about natural gifts. I was at a seminar she taught, and she said, I think God gave them to you, but if you don't believe in God, then Darwin did it. Yeah, I mean, where did it come from? Where did it come from? So self-deceived. There's the evil eye. Your evil eye, so full of darkness. And we see it all. We watch it. You can see it around us all the time. Sometimes it's horrific. Sometimes I've decided I don't like the word naughty. And I don't like that word. Because naughty seems to de-emphasize wrong. I was looking at some of the movies that are coming out recently and reading reviews of them and reading about them. They say it's delightfully raunchy. No, it's filthy. It's not delightfully raunchy. It's filthy. Yeah, we kind of wink at it and try to de-emphasize and just kind of put, oh, it's just, you know, it's like boys will be boys kinds of things. And there are rights and wrongs. You know, I have an old Garrison Keillor tape that's somewhere in my files that says, he said, you know, some things aren't caused by bad communication and lack of clarity. Some things are just wrong because they're wrong. That's pretty profound, isn't it? Because we're taught, well, wrong-ish. You know, there, and I can remember when kids were in, and I don't know if they still do this, in kindergarten, you'll say, they're not bad, they're naughty. Well, they're children, I understand that, and maybe bad isn't a good thing, but you know what? A lot of naughtiness out there in the world, and it's bad. It's bad. Matthew, your whole body, if your eye is evil, if it's single, then your whole body is full of darkness. And the light that you have is dark. How dark is that? I talked to you before about C.S. Lewis and the rats in the cellar. You don't see the rats in the cellar when you turn on the light because they're gone. But just because the light is on doesn't mean it's not there. It's there. Once again, through the eye gate, that's how we get to see it. That's how we get to see it. Romans 3 talks about there's none righteous, none that does good, none that seeks after God. We're altogether unprofitable, which is one of the amazing things. I always go back to our buddy Dave Ritz saying, go ahead and throw a life preserver into a dead body floating down the river and see what happens. They might bump into it, and if you're lucky enough, you might hook them, but the only way they're going to get to shore is you drag them in. Yeah, we go back to my naughtiness. There's no fear of God before their eyes. None at all. The fear is really reverential affection for God, peculiar to the children of God, springs from a sense of divine goodness. We were talking earlier today about the non-believer can look at things in nature, some of the pictures I showed you, and say, wow, isn't that extraordinary? Mother Nature, boy, she does some good stuff, doesn't she, Mother Nature? I always have those flashbacks of that commercial, it's not nice to fool Mother Nature where the thing comes down. Is that a butter commercial or something like that? That's ancient. But Mother Nature, you know, or Dame Nature, they would call her over in England. But when you become a believer, you look at that same picture and you say, wow, wow. Those of you who missed the video this morning, they talked about the likelihood that our world is habitable now is a result of billions and billions and trillions of chance events that just couldn't exist. Just no way. Just move one dial a little bit the wrong way and it's gone. And they say, well, you know, that's the way it works, you know. Well, 50-50 is what you get. And those are good odds. How many did they say? 1 billion, he said billion like 6, 7, 8 times. A lot of zeros. But they said there's no fear of God in their eyes. The full assurance, there's no holiness, consistency is in play in the heart at conversion. That's where you get this. Not before. Not before. There's no reverential awe tied into that. What's interesting about that really is the fact that fear, which probably misnamed, comes with the territory. Because from the outside we read in 1 John 2:16, for all that is in the world. Now, not just the bad stuff, all that is in the world. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. The lust, this is what Jameson, Fawcett, and Bowes says about this. They said, the avenue through which the outward things of the world, riches, pomp, and beauty inflame us. Wow, look at that. Doesn't it look great? We're out for a drive there. I looked back and saw this house nestled back in the back. This place is huge. I think my whole house would fit in their living room. And I think, wouldn't it be great to have space like that? or these incredible cars. I watch these guys on Meekums, and they all seem to be about old white guys. I don't know why that is, but you know, they're all sitting there and they're saying, and they, you know, when you bid on those cars, you don't even bid. There's somebody bid for you. In other words, it's like it's too much trouble for you to raise your hand. They raise a hand for you. And they're trying to get you to, you know, up the ante. They're like 67,000, 80,000. I mean, gee, when I go out to eat, I try to figure what I could have bought groceries if I hadn't paid for the restaurant tab. These guys are spending thousands and thousands and sometimes millions on these things. Where does it come? Boy, that looks good. It does look good. It does look good. The lust of the eyes, staring it down. There's the eye. Wow, look at that. So Scripture is full of these things. What did Satan do to Jesus in Matthew 4:8? Took him up to a high spot and said, "See all this? You can have this. This is all yours. Kingdoms and all the glory, just bow down and worship me." Now, if Jesus had his eyes closed, he wouldn't have seen it. Once again, all on the eye. So I have to ask myself, what's the Christian response to all this? There's many more, by the way. You can go through Samson and Delilah. Talks about, you can read all kinds of, I did a good bit of study. You can find all kinds of instances where our eyes started the problem. Boy, that looks good. Starting way back in the Garden of Eden with that shiny piece of fruit, whatever it was. It's pleasant to the eyes. I would like to have that. That looks good to me. He said, "I'll give this all to you." Well, there's a couple things that come to mind, I think. First one, sometimes don't even look. I was going to use the three monkeys. I decided that didn't work. You know, see no evil, speak no evil, hear no evil. There's a cute little song we learned as kids. Be careful, little eyes, what you see. Be careful, little ears, what you hear. You know what? I mean, your father's looking down in love. What are you looking at? That's what brought me in. What are you looking at? On my TV, I've set a band for a certain level that you've got to put a key in. And I'm amazed more and more that stuff that I thought, oh, really? Yeah, I said, no, that's blocked. That's blocked. That's blocked. As a matter of fact, DirecTV, it'll even block the titles, which is good, because some of the titles I wouldn't want to read out loud, much less read. Naughty. Not naughty. It's filth. It's filth. So sometimes, don't even look. My uncle, the doctor, he's in heaven now. We used to have this running joke where I'd say, "Hey, doc, well, it hurts when I do this." And his response was, "Well, then don't do it," right? You know? Oh, okay. I used to say, "Did you ever have it before?" "Yeah, well, you got it again." Okay. Job 31:1. Job said, "I made a covenant with my eyes not to look on a maid. I made this determination. I'm not going there. I'm not going to look at that." So I think sometimes what we can do is we can consciously decide this is not a direction to cast your gaze. This is not a position to put yourself in. This is not a place that you need to be. And we hear this, "What would Jesus do?" I think it could be overdone. I heard, "What would Jesus drive? What would Jesus buy at the grocery store?" You know, I know. But honestly, is this edifying? Is this building up? Is this something you can appreciate in the face of what God has done for you? But sometimes you just don't even look. Job said that. Isaiah 33:15. I want to show you a couple of verses here. This is pretty interesting. Verse 14 says, "The sinners in Zion are afraid. Fearfulness has surprised the hypocrites." They're afraid. They're creeped out. The sinners in Zion, they are fearful. The hypocrites. I'm going to teach on that sometime. I call it, you know, hypocrites only need come to church. See, I think we're all hypocrites. The only difference between us is we know it. You know, Hippocrates is a Greek. He's an actor. Everybody puts on a show sometime. But he said, "The sinners in Zion are afraid. Fearfulness has surprised the hypocrites. Who among us shall dwell with a devouring fire?" And who among us shall dwell with everlasting burnings? That is not a cheerful verse, is it? Fearfulness. Verse 15 says, he that walks righteously and speaks uprightly, he that despises the gain of oppressions, that shakes his hands from holding of bribes, that stops his ears from hearing of blood, and shuts his eyes from seeing evil. Hebrew there means to bind fast. Almost like put on a blindfold. I will not look at this. So sometimes, don't look. Don't look. If you know it's there, don't go there. Look away. Psalm 119:37 says, turn away my eyes from beholding vanity and quicken me or enliven me in your way. The New King James says, from looking at worthless things. Does that have any value? Think about books. Think about movies. Think about television. Think about the internet. As we look at these, this is a value. By the way, value can be enjoyment, can be appreciated. It doesn't have to be, I mean, if we spend all our time reading King James Version, I'm not so sure that's it either. I frankly can get tremendous value out of many things. But there's stuff out there that becomes popular. Now, I don't know about you guys, but somebody says, you've got to see this, you've got to read this book. You know what my first response is? No, I don't. I don't have to read that. Because the New York Times bestseller list, do I really care? I read reviews on movieguide.org, by the way, a really excellent site I recommend if you want to understand movies, and it has a nice perspective. Focus on the Family has one as well. You can read about movies and there's any value in it. But then I read that review and they give it like a -3. And then I read Roger Ebert and he gives it a plus, he gives it 4 stars. Now I'm not picking on Roger. I'm just saying clearly we're coming from two entirely different camps. He said, turn away my eyes from beholding vanity. I actually had these out of order. I thought I fixed my PowerPoint. So Psalms 101:3 says, I'm going to set no wicked thing before my eyes. I hate the work of them that turn aside. It shall not cleave me. It won't stick to me. Pretty powerful stuff, isn't it? So maybe the first thing I need to do when I think about making a covenant with my eyes to decide what I'm going to look at, and sometimes just don't go there. Just don't go there. A second thing, oh, by the way, the word for vanity is desolation or uselessness, as it's described, the NIV calls it that, a worthless thing. What good is this? What value does it have? It might be a nice little diversion. There's nothing wrong with diversions. There's nothing wrong with that. But just appreciating the world that's around us, going for walks and things like that. But honestly, some of the things we attend to are crazy. Second, choose what you look at. Not only you decide not to look at things, you decide what you should be looking at. For example, Proverbs 4:25 talks about this. It let your eyes look right on, let your eyelids look straight before you, just dead on. Don't look to ponder the path of your feet, let your ways be established. Turn not to the right hand nor to the left hand. Remove your feet from evil, dead on. Short and narrow, the way that leads to salvation, right? Broad. I had some cartoons before, kind of meandering around. Just keep focused. Keep focused. I think about the verse, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. Don't look to the right, don't look to the left. Look dead on. Look with intent. Proverbs 17:24 in King James says, wisdom is before him that has understanding, but the eyes of a fool are in the ends of the earth. NIV says this, a discerning man keeps wisdom in view. That's what I want to keep wisdom in view. What's wisdom? Applied knowledge. I think wisdom's the third step of faith. You know it, you agree it, and you act on it. Now you can know and agree with it, and I'm sure you've never done this, but I certainly have, said, well, I really shouldn't do this, I'm doing it anyway. know, Steve Brown once said, I was sinking deep in sin, whoopee. Kind of fun at times. But when you act upon it, you're keeping wisdom always before you. The NIV finishes by saying, this is New King James, the NIV also says that, but a fool's eyes wander to the ends of the earth. I guess the fool has the ultimate ADHD. They're just, just never focused. Proverbs 23:26 says, let your eyes observe my ways, your road, your course, your mode, your way of living. Where do we get those ways? From his word, right? Is that right? Remember I told you years ago about this buddy of mine that I said, you know, if you can show me in context, chapter and verse, something in the Bible that I don't agree with, I'll agree with it. He says, I thought that about you, which I considered a compliment. I don't know if he did or not, but yet, go back to Scripture. Everything that pertains to life and godliness has been provided to us in Scriptures. You need to study it, need to understand it, and that's the kind of things we should be looking on. Okay, let's say we get to do this. We invest the time in deciding what to not look at. And you know, it's pretty easy. It's pretty easy. If you have a second thought, your first thought should be run away. If you say, I don't know if I should be doing this, guess what? You probably shouldn't be doing it. And me. Secondly, focus on what's significant. Away from vanity, God's ways, understanding Scripture. There's so many resources out there for us to learn this. But what's the result if we do all this? Matthew 6:22 said, if your eye is clear, now there, if it has function, it has purpose, if it's doing what it's supposed to be doing, I'm going to go up one. I feel like John says that. If your eye is clear, your whole body's full of light. Remember what I said earlier? If your eye's single, if your eye's evil, your light is darkness, and boy, is that dark. The amazing thing about this, though, this is what one of the commentators talks about this, is he says that we can't generate this from within. We don't have the capability. Our eye is naturally evil. We're drawn to those things. That's why we like words like noise. Oh, you shouldn't have done that. Oh, you know better, right? Those kind of disarming ways to use language and technique to say, no, you know, don't be doing that. NESV says the eye is the lamp of the body. So then if your eye is clear, the whole body is full of light. The word there for full of light means whole, complete. We'll remind you what William Blake said again. Listen to this again. He said, this life's dim windows of the soul distorts the heavens from pole to pole completely. We're looking at creation through the dim window of our earthly eyes, and it's distorted. We don't see it. And leads you to believe a lie when you see with, not through the eye. He said, you don't need to be seeing with, you need to be seeing through the eye. Now here's the amazing thing about this eye. Ephesians 1:8, let the eyes of your understanding be enlightened. We turned on the switch. Oh my gosh, I didn't know that. Al was speaking earlier about the fact that as a scientist, he bought all that stuff. That made sense to him. You know, evolution and yeah, I kind of end start, and the gentleman talking this morning using some pretty big words, but making some very good points about the complexity. So yeah, I could see that happening. Yeah, yeah. An infinite number of monkeys typing on an infinite number of computers. I think they replaced the typewriters. They got computers now because they have spell check. And then when they're done, they finished it with Shakespeare's entire works. Okay. Come on. It makes sense when you see with your eyes instead of through them. Look what happens. Illuminae is photizo, photon torpedoes, so those of you who are the Star Trek fans, are photons. It means to illuminate, to bring light, to cause to see. Now look at that verse again. What happened? Did you understand? No. your cause to see. God flicked on the light. What do you see? To know, which in the Greek is eido, which actually a word that means to see. So you see the pattern here? The eyes of your understanding are enlightened. You see, you can perceive it now. Why? Because now you're wired for it. The hope of his calling, the riches of the glory of his inheritance, and the exceeding greatness of his power. With the same eyes that were reading Playboy or coveting a 63 split window Corvette or whatever. You put your favorite sin in there, okay? I won't ask for it. So, what are you looking at? Here's a nice start. Psalm 121, a song of degrees. What does degrees mean? It means a song of elevation, a journey to a higher place. If you want to see things better, you want to get up high, you know, and I got a much better vista now. I can see. What did Satan do for Jesus? He took him up to a high place so he could see everything. That's kind of what it's saying in Psalms 121, a song of degrees, at a higher level where you can get the better perspective. Remember when David Rich talked to us years ago about his first book, and he said the guys on the ground during the Normandy invasion thought they were going to lose. The guys in the air knew they were going to win because they could see what was happening. Down here, we can only see what's right in front of us. That perspective, that's the eyes of your understanding being enlightened. And Psalm 121 says this, I'll lift up my eyes unto the hills. From whence comes my help? My help comes from the Lord, which made heaven and earth. He won't suffer you to foot to be moved. He that keeps you will not slumber. He that keeps Israel shall neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord's your keeper, the shade on your right hand. The sun can't smite you by day, the moon by night. Preserve thee from all evil. He will preserve your soul and preserve your going out and your coming in from this time forth, even forevermore. That's what we should be looking at. Let's close in prayer. Lord, thank you so much for the gift of sight and these marvelous organs you've given us and the beauty that surrounds us. Help us to use it to glorify and learn more of you, and help us to seek to please you in all we do. In Jesus' name. Amen. How'd I do? Not bad.